This is Chick Flick Fix. I'm Julia Scott.
And I'm AJ Knox.
And we are joined... Oh, go ahead. I was going to introduce you as Super Smarty Pants Space Lady, which that's I'm sure is not how you were going to introduce yourself. Katie Mack is with us.
Hello.
How do you introduce yourself?
I say I'm Katie Mack. I'm an astrophysicist.
Yeah, you have a book out called The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking, which I think is an amazing title. I just realized also that I am now one lone master with two doctors in the room.
You're still smarter than me.
That's what happens in my family. My mom and I both have PhDs and my sister doesn't. And there was a time when shortly after I got my PhD that this was a running joke, and then we decided that wasn't very nice.
AJ is a doctor of theater, and I always want to call him Dr. AJ or Draj.
You can call me Doc Knox though. Like, I like that because then I sound like a Spider-Man villain.
That is actually very good.
Dr. Mack, I feel like sounds like either like a some kind of superhero or a rap artist. I'm
ooh,
not sure
yeah.
which.
But or that I'm Michael J. Fox one. Played you in that movie in the country. Anyway, what we do here is we watch chick flicks and rom-coms and decide if they need fixing. Can we make them better or can we make them weird? And this week we're talking about Happiest Season from 2020. Came out in late November. It's directed by Clea Duvall and written by Clea Duvall and Mary Holland. It stars Kristen Stewart, Mackenzie Davis, Dan Levy, Aubrey Plaza, a whole bunch of people. Like, this is the definition of star-studded.
Yeah.
Mary Steenburgen?
Yeah, Mary Steenburgen, Victor Garber, just a whole bunch of people. So shooting on this wrapped in February of 2020. They had, like, just finished before everything. And I figure it must be so weird to like sit on this movie for 8 or 9 months and just be like, with everything that happened this year, like what world are we going to be releasing this movie into?
Yeah, I heard it was supposed to be theatrical too, and then they decided to just put it on Hulu.
Oh wow!
So that people could actually see it.
Yeah.
The Oxwood, the gay bar where Abby and Riley have drinks, is a tribute to the Oxwood Inn, a lesbian bar in LA that closed in 2017, which was the last lesbian bar in LA at the time of its closing. I will link in the show notes to a really good Vice documentary about where have all the lesbian bars gone, which is really interesting.
When I was in college in this was the sort of early 2000s, there were no lesbian bars in LA. Like, I mean, there were like girl nights at some of the clubs, but like it was very hard to find any place for women. I'm surprised that there has been even one that's like a totally dedicated lesbian bar, because we could not find them when I was
yeah there was sort of this interesting cycle. It's all gentrification and capitalism and the patriarchy, weirdly. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah.
I think that two lines define this movie in placing it extremely firmly in its genre. The first one is, it's 5 days. How bad could it be? And the second line is, no more surprises. I promise. Because I would say that this is a really fascinating movie in that it really does have that, like, you know, Family Stone, Meet the Parents, you know, that sort of almost like Son-in-Law, where it's just like, it's a little wacky, it's less gross than some of the movies within this genre, but it's all like wacky misunderstandings. And then on top of that, or under that, is this fairly painful and very common story of being pushed back into the closet by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And also the theme that comes up also in a lot of these movies is just like sibling rivalry and exactly how far does it go?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you're the only one without a PhD, I actually am the one of my siblings with the highest education, so I hold on to that.
Nice.
Yep. AJ, what is this movie about?
I just woke up thinking about going home with you and got very excited about Christmas. I get to go meet the people that made my favorite person.
I'll always take December away over summer.
Abby, you and Harper have a perfect relationship.
She is my person, and I really want everyone to know that. I want to marry her.
What are you doing on your phone?
I left a gentleman alone in my apartment, so I'm tracking him to make sure he leaves.
You're tracking him?
Yeah, I track everybody. If the NSA can do it, so can I.
I'm so excited. I can't believe I'm finally going to meet everyone.
There's something that we should talk about.
Hi!
Okay. So, The Happiest Season tells the story of Kristen Stewart playing Abby alongside Mackenzie Davis as Harper. They're a couple. On the opening credits, we get to see these weird Hallmark card images of them kind of enjoying what looks to be like a year of a relationship, right? Like it's kind of going through a year. And already I was like,
I was really curious. I was like, is this, like you're saying, is this the retelling of the last year or is this like, this is what's going to happen?
Yeah, I couldn't
figure. And I'm sitting there like trying to find the meaning in all of these.
Yeah. And the weirdest part about it is some of the images were very clearly just photos of the actors that had been kind of photoshopped to make it look like illustrations. And some of them were very clearly illustrated and a little off proportion and wonky. And so I was already like, okay, this movie is already giving me a lot of mixed signals. I don't know what to do. And so then we're introduced.
It was a montage, you know. I mean, you gotta have a montage.
Yeah, you start off with a montage of characters we haven't met,
right?
And just drawings of them. Really, we don't need to actually see them interacting.
But it's cozy, like you know what you're getting.
It was
into.
Very cozy. Yeah. It was very Christmassy.
It felt like a classic sort of '90s credits sequence.
Yeah, it was like a much more Hallmarky version of the opening credits for Christmas Vacation or something like that, where you're it doesn't really relate to the movie itself, but it kind of gives you a sense of this is the tone we're setting. Mm-hmm. So then we see them, they're walking around, I think it's somewhere in Pennsylvania, they're walking around doing a guided tour of Christmas lights, which nobody has ever done in the history of Christmas.
With Michelle Buteau in this amazing cameo as just like, I don't know what tour she wishes she was holding, but I want to go on that one.
It's such an odd.
She's basically, weird... she's like 2 seconds from here was murder, there was murder, children are buried in this front yard.
Yeah. And so during this tour, we get introduced to the fact that, Harper loves Christmas. Christmas, Christmas, Christmas. And Abby could give two shits about Christmas. She doesn't really care. They climb up on a roof and
Was such a weird scene. That was they just found it was somebody's house. And at first I thought this has got to be an abandoned house. But it was not an abandoned house. There were people inside the house and they just climbed up onto the house.
Yeah, I thought that either she was going to be like, I bought it, or they were going to sit on the roof of this empty house and be like, hey, we should like start building dreams. No, they just like climb up the what looks like those like scaffolding or something.
Yeah, it's like the house is under construction or something, but there's a weird kinky...
But there are people in it.
Yeah, there's a weird kinky reindeer Mrs. Claus thing happening inside.
It's a very rude Rudolph.
Yeah, so then we get, you know, the wacky rom-com-y situation of Abby falls off the roof, holds onto the edge while she sees inside and there's a couple doing kinky stuff in there. And then she falls on an inflatable snowman. Womp womp. And so they run away again. They keep running away from things in this opening scene. So they run away into an alley.
It's very sort of Father of the Bride.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then, Harper says, hey, I have a crazy idea. Why don't you come home with me for Christmas and meet my family and blah, blah, blah. It's going to be great. And they're like, yeah, okay, fine, sure. And then the next morning, Abby wakes up and she's like, I just keep thinking about like, this is going to be such a great Christmas. And Harper's like, you don't have to come if you don't want to. I'm like, wait, were they supposed to be drunk the night before or something? Like, why was this invitation issued? Is it just heat of the moment?
They were drunk on love.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we instantly get it like, okay, why doesn't Harper want her to come home? It's a little weird. And then they do that really, I hate it in this movie. She goes, I just know that since you don't, your parents are dead, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, nobody says that to somebody whose parents are dead.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You don't explicitly say that.
And then, that whole storyline just gets so weird later on.
Oh, yeah. I have some thoughts on that. And so, yeah, then we also meet Dan Levy, who is Abby's best friend, who is, you know, kind of tech savvy. He keeps tracking people on his phone. That's his thing. He's also a, I guess he's a publicist or a manager for authors. And he agrees to watch Abby's pets while she goes away for the weekend.
Well, he's filling in for her as a pet sitter.
Yes.
Yeah, she's pet sitting other people's right, pets, so and he's taking them.
That's right.
And it occurred to me somewhere along this, or somewhat after this, that this first part of the movie is very sort of cool toned, kind of like, you know, they're in this sort of like hipster, everything's yeah. you know in white Blues, and blue grays. And beige, yeah. and then you get to wherever it is her parents are, small town Philadelphia, and somebody just like. Let us turn up the intensity on all the colors. Let's yeah. go for not just warms, but like, ooh, it's going to be, you're going to get a suntan from, yeah. from all of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Dan Levy's character as well is an interesting, he's an interesting character because he is the stereotypical gay best friend
yeah.
type. But like everybody's gay. So like maybe that's, I don't know. I had weird feelings about his character.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. Because he's not, a stereotypical gay best friend is usually the only gay character in this entire movie.
Yeah.
But he's not. And yeah. that's why I'm like, well, he's, I was about to say he's allowed to be there, which very magnanimous
wow.
of me.
Wow. Very kind of you, Julia.
right.
Gosh.
But yeah, no, I mean, I love Dan Levy.
Yeah.
He's great. And he's some of the best things in this movie. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to those later. But
yeah, he's definitely like, well, we'll get to favorite characters. Hint. But yeah, so he agrees to watch the pets that she's watching. And Abby and Harper set off to go meet Harper's family. And while they are in the car halfway there, Harper does.
And it's not clear how far it is, like, except for the fact that a Pluber would be super expensive.
Yeah, it's far enough that they're driving and they're going to stay there for a week, 5 days, right? So it's mm-hmm. far enough that it's out of town. And
it's like a several hour drive, I think.
Yeah, I imagine it is like a three hour drive, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. And they're driving along and Harper says, hey, remember how I told you that I came out last year to my parents and told them about you and they took it really well? Well, it didn't quite go that way. She goes, what, they didn't take it well? She goes, oh, no, not that. I didn't tell them anything. And so
which is
she reveals on this car ride when she has Abby trapped in the car effectively and says, hey, yeah. I'm not out. And here's what I need you to do. I need you to also go back in the closet for 5 days. And pretend to be my roommate.
And this was such a weird thing. Like, it's not a small thing.
It's not a small ask.
Lied about something that big. Like to.
It's not like I've told them you're a lawyer,
right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean the you know when you're dating someone and you tell them, oh, I told my family about you and this is what they said. Like, that's not something you just casually.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a big deal. And the idea that she made up that whole thing.
Yes.
And also lied about her coming out story.
Yes.
It's like, nobody does that. Why would you
do that? I could see it happening if she's like, they've been having this long conversation about coming out to her parents. Yeah. And she like, I'm going to do it when I go there. And then she goes to this completely trauma-free, non-complicated family and comes back and is like, oh, no, I totally did it. But yeah, and it's, again, like, I love how it balances this, like, because it is so genre correct to be like, to sort of, you know, walk back the misunderstanding in several steps.
Yeah.
But it's on such a heavy topic and it could have gone very well or very badly. And I feel like within the confines of this context, I'm like, all right, I will see where this goes, I guess.
I will tell you, I had a very visceral reaction to this, which was mm-hmm. like,
yeah,
she's toxic. Tell her to turn around and drive you home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this was not something that like when she responded to that being like upset, but then being like, okay, I guess, you know, I love you, I'll try it. I was like, That is not how.
No, and her, like, her excuse,
I don't understand that interaction at all.
Her excuse being like, well, my dad is under a lot of stress because he's running for election and they need everything to be perfect and I just don't know how they'll react. I'm like, that's cool. This is a conversation that needed to happen before we got in the car.
That's what I was going to say, that I feel like if you are going to ask someone to not be your girlfriend for the weekend, that is A, maybe, you know, skip the whole lie last summer, but like, that's something that you have that discussion so that it's an agreement. Like, yes, I know this sucks.
Yeah.
But, and it could be even like, I need you there because this is going to be hard for me. And I know this is a big ask, but because it's also, it's so complicated with family. Cause when it's like, you know, he needs everything to be perfect. Obvious subtext and gay is not perfect. It's like that thing of, you know, like, oh, my grandma's super racist. And it's like, and you hang out with her because, or you don't say anything. And like, yes, I get it. Politics, small America, family, schmamily. But it's, yeah, there's so many levels of sucky there, which is why it's so weird that it's delivered with this like, well,
yeah,
right,
about that.
And I think we could probably dwell on this for the whole episode, but I think, like, suffice it to say, it sounds like we're all on board with this idea that the premise itself right now is really cringy.
Yes.
But we'll see where it goes.
Right.
And I will say, Kristen Stewart does a really good job in this movie, particularly in that scene. I think the writing is a little clunky in that scene, but she does a good job of conveying that hurt and that, like, betrayal. I just don't understand why she flips so quickly and it's like,
yeah,
like what you said, Julia, that's 5 days, how bad could it be, right? And I'm like, oh, it could be real bad. It could be real bad.
Yeah, the moment when she said yeah, she'll try it, like, that was like, I, that, like, Kristen Stewart is great. That transition,
that was hard.
I was still a few sentences back on the anger part, and I couldn't quite get to that.
Yeah.
I had to be like, okay, it's a movie, I'm going to deal with it, but
I did the same thing.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe other parts of the movie would have needed this as well, but like, it needs more build up in that we need more trauma is not what I mean. Like, but maybe like, if it's understandable that she's suddenly like, well, I haven't had a family Christmas in 10 years. And she's like in this weird sort of in for a penny, in for a pound, or show us even more that like their relationship is worth it. Because, and I mean, this is something that romantic comedies do. It's all like, well, you'll just have to take it on faith that this is a good relationship. But I'm like, sell it to me for 3 minutes. Because there is bullshit that you will put up with for someone who has, like, you know, put a lot of savings into the Goodwill account, sort of. But here, it's just like, okay, all right, sure. And I feel like that comes back again later in the movie, where you're like, I need to know that this was remotely actually worth it. But okay, keep going. Yeah. We are still in the car. Nothing is actually.
I know. She also complicates it in the car as well. Harper does, by saying, I also told them that your parents are dead and you that's why you're coming. And I'm like, you used her real lived experience as a leveraging tool to like explain why you're bringing her. Like that actually got me too.
Anyway. And it sounds like she was almost intentionally vague about it so that everyone either thinks that they just died or that they died when she was 4.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then every other person in this film has just a huge inability to have tact around the death of somebody else's family.
Yes.
And every time she meets someone.
Yeah. Well, they arrived at the house and then she says, oh, also, don't tell them you're gay. I was like, A, why would that come up? Like, and B, and then she says, you're a bad liar. And then she starts to meet the family and the family's like, I'm so sorry about your parents. Everyone is just like, oh, it's just so sad. And there's like some humor in it, but it's, if it were a lie, I would actually enjoy it more as a joke, as like a recurring joke.
Yeah.
If her parents were alive and she had a fine relationship with them and that was just the lie that Harper made up to justify bringing her home.
That is a very good point. That would be funny. Cause then you also have like, she's a bad liar. So she has to do all this like talking around the issue so that it's technically not a lie.
Yeah, but in this case, it's just really hurtful. Yeah. Every time she meets someone, they've just like
they're talking pound about her, on her the death of her family.
Yeah, it's not nice.
So we meet the family. Victor Garber, Callahan from Legally Blonde, Mary Steenburgen, and Allison Brie is the older sister, and Mary Holland, who co-wrote the film, is the younger sister. And this family,
I love Jane. I love Jane so much. I was like, I hate that I know that I am Jane.
I think most artsy people see themselves in Jane a little bit. But we meet the family and we instantly discover that this is a group of horrible people. And it's not, in my mind, and I don't know, you guys might disagree, but in my mind, it's not comically horrible. They're cruel. They're selfish and cruel and callous. And even when they meet, I mean, Allison Brie's character is probably the worst offender of the bunch. And I kind of hate when Allison Brie gets painted into these characters because I feel like she's so funny and this movie makes her so cruel that there's very little humor left in her. But they meet her husband as well.
Who is Don't Be a Lawyer from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's where I know him from. Okay, yeah. The first thing he says is, your hands are really dry. Some coconut oil will help that. I'm like, God, everyone is so judgy. But yeah, so she gets to the house. She gets a tour of the house. She gets shown the basement room where she will be sleeping, which used to be Jane's room, which doesn't have a lock on it because she had night terrors and she thought that her parents would lock her in. Like all the weird subtle hints about Jane's growing up are pretty funny.
Yeah.
And it's also the room of all the plastic bins.
Yeah, and it's just like a storage room. And we also discover, the next morning it's where Allison Brie's kids sleep when they come to visit. And there's no lock on the door, which of course won't come back to play later.
Right, yeah. I mean, as soon as they mentioned about the lock on the door, it's like, okay, that's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it. By the way, the movie Home for the Holidays, I don't know if you've...
Mm-hmm.
So that's a classic. And there are actually a lot of sort of similar themes in it in various ways, but the older sister in Home for the Holidays and the older sister in this film are basically the same.
Oh, interesting. Person. Yeah.
I mean, in terms of like, it's the uptight, you know,
type A,
you know, achievement. Yeah. Yeah.
And also, Family Stone. I was about to say Romancing the Stone. That is not it, but the Family Stone, where you also have this, like, not just
sibling rivalry.
This very unsubtle sibling rivalry and these people who are, and I think that in Family Stone, there's at least a little more charm in their bickering, even if it is pretty harsh. But here, I don't think it's written to be comically horrible. I think it's written to just be horrible, but it's a little too horrible.
Yeah, it's really...
Everybody's really cruel.
I don't know if that's just like my trauma or just objectively that like this is not great.
No, I just found almost everybody in the family pretty reprehensible, except for Jane.
The only thing that might make that okay is that you start to, again, empathy but not sympathy for Harper and like, okay, I'm starting to get how this could be too much. But that's when you fake having COVID so you don't have to go home for Christmas.
Well, yeah, and so we're introduced to the dad who is running for mayor, and it's very clear that like everything about this family has been kind of curated around his political career.
Amazing detail that Mary Steenburgen takes pictures with the iPad.
Yeah.
Yes, the big clunky iPad was just such a nice like comic touch.
Yeah.
So basically the movie just kind of chronicles these few days that they're spending at this house. We go out to dinner with the family, and of course Harper's high school boyfriend has been invited because mom wants to set her up with her high school sweetheart. You know, of course there's the awkward, he's hitting on Harper while Abby's sitting there pretending to be her roommate. They go to the bathroom to get a little breather, and as they're leaving the bathroom, they see Aubrey Plaza's Riley, who is very kind of clearly Harper's ex. There's a very awkward
conversation. And I'm like, can I click over to the Riley movie? Because I want to watch the Riley movie.
Everybody who knows who's watched this movie wants to see the Riley movie instead. Yeah. It looks like a Very good film.
Yeah. And so we get this kind of glimpse of Riley, and we find out that they were high school sweethearts briefly. And then we are off to a big family event at the this party. This is basically a fundraiser party where he's announcing that he's going to be mayor. Riley is also there for some reason. Like, everybody in this town goes to every party. It's one of those. It's one of those movies.
Well, I could see it, like, if you are sort of upper middle class and sort of run in the same circles. Like, they're probably at a golf club or something, and it's like everybody has come home for the holidays. And now they have to do the stuff that their family has decided is important and wonderful and traditional.
Yeah.
And Riley is known to the family. Like, they knew that she was friends with Harper. Yeah. Just not any, like, we learn more about the backstory later on. But
yeah.
Everybody
they
knows
were just,
Riley.
They were roommates.
So, yeah. So they're hanging out at this party. Abby steps outside to take a call from Dan Levy, who said he's feeding her pets and stuff. And she goes, what about the goldfish? Or what about the fish? He goes, the fish? Which begins maybe my favorite subplot of the movie is him trying to replace the fish. So I think maybe that initial call happens earlier. I think this is when he's actually scooping the fish out of the tank, asking, hey, by the way, if I were to want to get fish just like the ones that you're sitting, where would I get them? And so she's out there talking to him briefly and saying, like, oh no, it's fine, it's a little weird, you know, but everything's going fine. And then Aubrey Plaza pops out from behind a bush and says, hey, I recognize what you're going through right now, something along those lines, very vague. Mm-hmm. And then kind of vanishes. And you also get a sense that Allison Brie is getting a little suspicious of Abby. Something's off. Allison Brie is also just really hostile.
You know what just occurred to me? Aubrey Plaza in this movie is the awesome white pantsuit lady from Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. Like, she returns and she's just amazing and smart and so queer. It makes me want to, you know, take a nap.
A lot just happens in this. So I'll try to whiz through the rest of this plot. So they get home. Abby sneaks up to Harper's room, but on her way, mom comes out of, and I don't know why she can't be wandering around the house at night. People are still up. Like, I don't know why she has to be in her room. She can, like, be coming up to
because
get a snack
she's a very bad liar and would not be able to think of what to say if she got caught.
So she's going up to sneak into Harper's room, and the mom's coming, so she jumps into a broom closet, steps on a Roomba. The Roomba knocks a bunch of stuff over, and mom opens the door and says, in the most cringe-inducing line in the whole movie, Abby, what are you doing in the closet? Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, Harper dragged her in there. That's what she's doing in the closet. She's fine. And so then Abby goes back down to her bedroom in the basement, and Harper is there waiting for her. They fool around, but they fall asleep, wake up in the morning when everybody's coming into the room because it has no lock. They almost get caught. Very farcical. Very farcical little moment. The kids, Allison Brie's kids, spy Harper hiding behind the door while the parents are in there getting stuff.
I was fully expecting there to be a blackmail subplot there.
I was too. There kind of is. There's like a almost.
Yeah, you get the impression the kids will tell if they need to.
Yeah, and you get the impression that that's kind of why they're messing with Abby a little bit. What happens? Oh, yeah. Abby finds out we're going to have a big white elephant party, so you need to get a gift. Another thing Abby neglected to tell her about this weekend. Harper is just. And Harper keeps like leaving her alone. She's like, oh, I'm going to go work with my dad. I'm like, why did you bring her? I just kept getting madder and madder at Harper as this movie went on.
Yeah, she keeps abandoning Abby in, like, the worst situations. Yeah. And Abby's, like, just totally out to sea and can't talk to anybody. And, like, it's awful.
And so they go to the mall. Harper – or Abby goes to the mall with Allison Brie and the kids. And Allison Brie is like, I need to go get the kids. Santa promised them a copy of Sylvia Plath, the complete works of Sylvia Plath, which I was like, that was a good line. I like that. So she – leaves the kids with Abby, who is in, like, just the wrong store to buy a white elephant gift in. You buy a white elephant gift in Target, or you buy a white elephant gift in, like, somewhere where it's, like, going to be something fun and weird. You don't go to buy, like,
but she doesn't
pendant.
Know what white elephant is.
She's in this kind of fancy store. The kids slip
can
a locket.
Can I ask, though, is white elephant the one where you can steal the previous person's gift and, like, there's two steals per
it's like
something?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, you get, like, usually there's, like, two steals and it becomes very competitive. And this is jumping ahead, but later in the movie, there's like 50 people at this party. And if there's two steals per person, this is going to be like, we do White Elephant with our family and it's like 12 people and it still takes an hour. I'm like, this is going to, you guys are going to be here all night. Anyway, so the kids slip a little locket in her purse and she gets busted for shoplifting in one of the funnier scenes with these mall cops who think they're in like CSI. Mm-hmm. But it's again, like nothing we haven't seen in the movie with mall cops before. And this now has cast a pall over the family. And Abby is now a pariah.
And it's like, what, did they call home to her proxy parents? Like, how would anyone... it's not like she needs to get bailed out.
I know, but it's...
I guess, well, I guess the sister would... The sister would tell everybody.
And everybody knows everybody in this town as well. Yeah, so probably the mall cops know.
Abby also seems to know everybody's names. Like, she learns people's names really quickly. I'm like, oh, you don't care about these people. Oh, also, when they're in the store, did you guys catch this? There's this moment where the one of the campaign folks who they meet at the party is in the store very briefly. And Abby walks up to her and she's like, hi, I'm Abby. We met last night.
Mm-hmm.
I swear, and I rewound it to hear it. I swear she says, hi, I'm Albie. I'm like, did she say Albie or Abby?
Not picked up on that.
Oh, man. I just couldn't get over it. And, of course, this other person who we've met once is also a monster and is like, nah, I don't care. I don't want to talk to you. Bye.
I did think it was weird that it didn't occur to Abby that maybe the kids put the thing in her bag or she never, like, brings up that possibility.
Yes. Like, at least bring it up with Harper, even if she's like, there's no point to bring it up with the rest of the family.
Or, I mean, or don't, you know, don't tell the cops on them maybe, but, like, at least, like, have us chat with them and be like, hey, if this happened, like, you know, like, whatever. I don't know. But she seems to, this just doesn't occur to her at all. This is clearly the only possible thing that could have happened.
Yes,
right?
There's a lot of that in this movie.
Again, it's very, very sort of Father of the Bridey. Just these like weird misunderstandings that are then handled weirdly. And...
Well, it has these like farcical elements that are never really given much follow through, which I'm like, this is really trying to be, it like has all the ingredients of something like Meet the Parents or something like that, but without any of the commitment to the comedy of it in my mind. Mm. There's some really witty jokes and some writing, but yeah, anyway, we'll get into that. So Abby is now left alone and wanders the streets of this small town, of course, runs into Aubrey Plaza. They go to a gay bar where there's a fun drag show happening.
And Jinx Monsoon and Ben de la Creme. I'm like, give them three numbers in this movie.
Yeah, which I thought was, I don't really watch, I just kind of catch Drag Race as it's on. I don't really watch it, but Jenna was like, those are Drag Race people. Yeah, so they're hanging out. And then Aubrey Plaza says, hey, did Harper tell you like what really happened between us? And basically it's another horrible story of Harper throwing somebody out of the closet to protect herself.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of outing Riley in high school and being horrible. And I'm like, okay.
And outing her while they were in a relationship to sort of save herself. It's not just a general Mean Girls style.
Yeah, they were outing. They were together. It's just, yeah. And she, yeah. Oh boy. And so, they're hanging out and then, Harper calls or texts is like, hey, I'm done hanging out with the family. Come meet up with us at a bar. So she goes and hangs out with high school friends. Everyone's getting wasted. And she's like, I'm going to go home. Abby's like, yeah, I'm going home. Peace.
I'm going to suggest that of the two friends that she meets up with, at least two of them are in at least one MLM each.
One what?
Multi-level marketing scheme. Like they sell makeup or weird candles or something.
Probably.
It's also like everything that every interaction that Harper and Abby have, Harper is just awful to Abby. And everything we know about Harper is that she is awful.
Yeah, that she's
very hard.
Completely selfish.
It's because she's a journalist and journalists don't care about people's feelings.
it's so frustrating because you also, I mean, they probably didn't really mean to do this, but Riley and Abby have amazing chemistry.
Yeah.
They clearly get each other and they like clearly there's some, you know, there's definitely a spark there and you don't, and there just isn't with between Abby and Harper. Like I looked for it. I just like, it was just like meh.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to root for them to you know, work it out at that point.
So, yeah. So she goes home and Harper stays out way late. And the next morning they have kind of a fight. And then she's walking. She goes downtown and hangs out again with Aubrey Plaza. And then Harper sees her and has the audacity to say, "So what were you doing today? Who are you with? Blah, 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 blah." I'm like, you've left her alone. Like, you don't want anything to do with her. So, yes, of course she's going to hang out with the only other person who's being nice to her in this entire town.
And whom she presumably can be herself with and not have to, like, remember what lie she's told what person.
So, so they have a big fight. And, also, I totally neglected to mention this. Abby has an engagement ring that she's going to supposedly give Harper on Christmas. That's like the whole point of this trip is I'm going to propose on Christmas Day because Harper loves Christmas. She calls Dan Levy and says, "Hey, I'm having an awful time. I don't know what to do." He hangs up on her. I'm like, oh God, she needs a friend right now. And he just hung up on her.
But he's in the fish store.
He's in a fish store trying to get a new fish. Later that night, the big holiday party is happening. Shenanigans are going on. Everyone's brought their white elephant gifts. Dan Levy shows up because he's like, "I'm rescuing you from this place." And she's like, "Hold on, I'm going to go get my stuff." And in like the best moment of the movie, she walks up to Harper and is like, "It's over. It's all over." And starts to leave. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I actually applauded. Like, I actually applauded this movie. And I think the point where you're supposed to be like, "Oh no," but I actually applauded. Right.
And it was great too, because it wasn't like clearly other people saw that she said that, but it wasn't played as like a whole big scene. It was just like
quiet.
She's just doing this. She doesn't care anymore. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to really make a thing of it because everybody's kind of too self-absorbed to care at that point. But like, it was very well done.
Yeah. I like that. And then, she goes downstairs to pack up her bag. Harper comes down. They have a little conversation, which of course they like solve their problem and they start kissing. And then, Alison Brie pops in and she goes, "Oh, you're gay." And then they have like a physical fight through the house as they're like chasing each other and choking each other with garlands. And
which is like, yes, that is a scene that could exist in this movie, but it needs to exist at an earlier point and not during this like heavier part of it. Also, sidebar, Dan Levy is amazing in his mingling at this party. Yes.
Yeah. How much do you bench? Oh, 1,000.
Yeah, no, he's very good because he's pretending to be straight for some reason. I don't know how that happened.
Because, of course, he has to be her boyfriend or her ex-boyfriend who is back to win her back. And I'm like, because that could actually happen in a movie like this. And also, of course, he also has to weirdly sort of butch up.
And I do like that the parents are so clueless that when he introduces himself as her ex-boyfriend, her heterosexual ex-boyfriend, Abby's heterosexual ex-boyfriend, it's like two queer people telling a very conservative older woman that they are a straight couple. And she totally buys it. And then he's like, "I nailed that." That was one of my favorite, because they did not nail it.
No, it's also cute that as he's trying to play straight, he's also actually hitting on the straight guy he's trying to, like, make friends with.
Yeah.
it's clearly, like, he clearly has mixed feelings about this interaction, but he's going to try.
And so this fight happens. Meanwhile, you discover that Alison Brie and her husband have been split up for the last 6 months or so, and he's been kind of having affairs. And they've been keeping it a secret because of the campaign, and everything has to be perfect. Meanwhile, they're fighting their way through the house. They make their way downstairs right as somebody opens up the white elephant gift that Jane has made, which is a very large painting of downtown. And I was kind of expecting it to be a much weirder painting. By the way, she's like, whoever gets this is really going to love it. Because she's already like talked about this cool, weird fantasy sci-fi book that she's writing. And she's clearly got a very vivid imagination, but it's just a lovely little painting of downtown, very, you know, Hallmarky. And they're having a big fight in the living room in the middle of this white elephant gift party. And Alison Brie outs Harper to the family, says she's a lesbian in this very angry, aggressive way that I found very cruel and horrible. And then Harper smashes the painting over her face, breaks the painting, And then Jane has this line of like, I spent 100 hours on that, which like is heartbreaking. And so they have this huge fight. Everything kind of boils over, and she
explicitly says it's a lie.
Yeah, she says it's a lie. I'm not gay.
Yeah.
And then Abby leaves,
because there's this pause where like both, I think Abby and we as the viewer sort of at the same time are like, okay, this is a sucky way for this to happen.
Are you going
to
own it?
But at least it's out there. Mm-hmm. And then Harper's like, nuh-uh.
Yep.
Yeah.
Doubles down
on
the lie.
And she tries to blackmail back with this thing about the cheating. And it kind of doesn't really, nobody, like that kind of ends up sounding weird and doesn't really work. And it's just this very uncomfortable scene.
Yeah. And so Abby leaves and she's, Daniel Levy comes out and they have this conversation, and Daniel Levy has this lovely monologue, although I did feel it was in like just the wrong place in this movie. But it was basically about how every queer person's coming out story is different, right? And just because your story was one thing doesn't mean Harper's story is going to be the same thing. Doesn't mean my story is the same thing. Doesn't mean anyone's.
Yeah.
And I liked that monologue.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like, wait, he's been the voice of reason this whole time. Every time she calls him, he's been saying, yo, get out, leave. Like, don't put up with this. This is toxic. And suddenly he has kind of really shifted tone. And then Harper pulls up and finds them and apologizes and says, like, you're my family, which has that very kind of chosen family quality, right? Like, she goes, I'm so sorry. Just give me a second chance to make this all up to you. And then she looks over at Dan Levy and he's like, yeah, do it. Yeah, go for it. And I'm like, no!
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I thought that conversation between Dan Levy and Abby was the only part of the film that I felt really had like real emotional resonance,
and that made it
not fit into the film in a lot of ways, but it was it was an interesting moment. Just the, you know, him kind of saying like, you know, your coming out story was happy and mine was not.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are, you know, have different approaches to that. And she's, you know, and her response to that was, and, you know, he said like, maybe, you know, she's not ready. And her response was, I want to be with someone who's ready. And that felt really true and really, you know, very sincere and real. And like that seemed like, okay, that's what the message of this film should be. But then, nope, you just throw that out.
Yep.
And as soon as Harper apologizes, like, oh, okay, it's fine now. And you're just like, wait, no, but we had it. It was right there.
You were so, you know, close.
That was the
so
thing.
Close.
Yeah.
And there's also something there that could have been about, you know, like a supportive family is not like a one part deal. Like, it's not like, oh, you come from this great supportive family, they're a little conservative, but they're like that her family looks picture perfect, but it's not in all these different ways. And to be like, well, why can't she come out? And it's like, well, because all these reasons. But that also some gets lost somewhere, because like what he's talking about feels like it has the heft, like it has it like it's grounded in something real. But yeah, no, there needs to be like more air on either side of it, sort of. Part of me is also like, if he's just like trying to talk her out of it throughout the movie, and at one point he's like, I can't have this conversation over and over again, I'm just going to tell her to go for it, so at least I don't have to tell her to leave again, because, you know, because that's how I feel about
it. Sounds like he's on board with her now. He's on board with Harper.
It's the magic of Christmas in small town
America.
Yeah,
and then
made him realize what love is.
That's kind of what we end up with at the end of the movie, right? As soon as she kind of agrees to give Harper the second chance, the family also like all has a turnaround. Like, the parents realize that they've kind of sacrificed their children's happiness for their own successes. And you start to realize like what drove all these kids to this point. Like, and there's a really interesting line where like, the two older daughters are, you know, we're so messed up because we, you know, we tried to make them perfect. And the only reason Jane is okay is because we gave up on her in preschool. And I'm like,
yeah,
I kind of like that. Like, that's an interesting lesson to learn is, like, we were our parenting tactics hurt our kids. And that's, like, a very interesting yeah. kind of lesson for this movie to kind of dig into, but it just brushes that. It's like, yep, and that's it. And now we're better.
Yeah. And the same vein where, like, the dad is like, well, I did this because I wanted you to be proud of me. That he yeah. has this huge sort of
yeah, they gaping all have maw
of insecurity. And that's also super interesting. So, like, mm-hmm. everybody has sort of ruined everyone else because you know what they could have done, AJ?
They could have talked to each other. and so then we're Christmas morning. Things seem to be going really well. Family seems to be happy. Everyone's there. Everyone's happy, having a good time. A lot of warm fuzzies. Like, I will say after that scene, like starting, like the epilogue of this movie really feels very warm and Christmassy and does leave you with a lot of good feelings. And it's mm-hmm. happy and huggy and like, let's all take photos and, let's all embrace each other's differences. And then of course the dad gets a call from Anna Gasteyer, who has been kind of the, his potential campaign manager. And she's like, I think you could win. Let's just keep this stuff about your daughters under wraps. And then he tells her no. Yeah. And then we jump ahead a year. Jane has published her book with the help of Dan Levy and it's like amazing and a bestseller and everybody loves it.
And he won the mayor race anyway.
He won the mayor race. Abby and Harper engaged, right? Everyone got all the good things. So it does like end on a very happy, positive, warm, fuzzy note. And they go and watch It's a Wonderful Life as a whole family with everybody. And that's the end of the movie.
And you're like, remember movies? I will say there are two really good things about that epilogue scroll of Instagram photos.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of fun.
I've loved it. And when they're on the Pride Parade, and like every year I do this, like when I see the proud parents, I'm like, all right, Waterworks. Yep. And it was the same there. And also that Riley has wound up with Clea DuVall. And I'm like, all right, no, I am here for that. Like she does a little cameo in that. But always like they're in the Pride Parade and I'm like, okay, I can't. I don't. And that you're scrolling back chronologically that she did not propose right away. So I'm like, okay, so she...
Yeah, that was important.
That like, all right, so there was some sort of rebuilding of something if we're going to see that as, okay, well, if this is the way it's going to be, at least it wasn't like, all right, blank slate, everything's good.
Yeah, I was very glad that they didn't shove in a proposal scene as soon as the family accepted her. Because I was a little bit worried that they might do that. And the fact that it was clearly some time afterward, but they did let us know that it happened, like that was good.
Yeah.
I mean, still she shouldn't have stayed, but you know, given that she did, like, you know.
Yeah, and that's where I have all of these conflicting feelings where I'm like, kind of like we've talked about before, like it's, you know that saying, like you will know that there's equality when a mediocre woman gets as far as a mediocre man. And I kind of feel like we're, I guess, getting somewhere when a gay holiday rom-com can also have the same kind of faults that a regular rom-com has, like where you're like, no, what are you, idiot? Like where you're almost treating the screen as you would a horror movie, like, no, not in there. But it's not like, it's not bad because you're like, ooh, this is all stereotypes. Or like, this is horrible and nobody winds up happy, where you're more like, no, the wrong guy, that guy over, you know, like, and I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah.
But the taking someone back into the closet with you story is so big and so complex and so painful and maybe shouldn't have been taken as far as it was here. Like, she could have been just like implicitly straight. Like, she doesn't have to say, hello, I'm Straighty McStraiterson from Straightville, USA. Yeah. And again, like, I think it's an interesting take to have that be sort of any other rom-com lie of like, oh no, we've been engaged all along, or no, I'm really a lawyer or whatever. But it's also very weird to have it be any rom-com lie.
Well, since you brought it up, I will say, I was thinking about it this morning, and Happiest Season is basically just Get Out if he decided to stay with the family at the end. And this is spoilers, so jump ahead if 30 seconds if you haven't seen Get Out. But Get Out, going to visit girlfriend's family in the middle of nowhere, wealthy white family in the middle of nowhere. They're kind of suspect and kind of weird and kind of, you know, the alternate in Get Out is they're hyper liberal, like they're extra liberal, which mm-hmm. makes them dangerous. And obviously the racial politics, which don't exist in this movie at all, pretty much. But you get a tour of the house at the beginning where you get all the stuff you're going to like pay off later. You get a very contentious sibling relationship. And then you get the best friend who you keep calling where you're like, things are weird here. I don't really like it. And the friend is like, get out. You don't want to be there. And it would be like if at the end of Get Out, the friend showed up and was like, I think this family's okay.
That's a really interesting way to look at it. I mean, so the main trope here is home for the holidays, pretending to, you know, that fake relationship / fake not relationship.
Yeah.
And the main couple, I feel like we're all probably in agreement here. We really like Abby.
Yeah.
Not so hot on Harper. Not just don't care about them getting together, but don't want them to.
Don't actively want them not to be together.
I felt like they just seemed awkward together on screen the whole time they were together. There wasn't that chemistry. They didn't seem to know how to interact physically. And yet there was this other non-couple that did really well with that. So that made it very hard.
And I don't necessarily feel like I wanted her to end up with Aubrey Plaza. I just didn't want her to end up with Harper. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
She just had chemistry in this movie.
Well, and the chemistry existed because she was able to be herself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she was able to be honest and she wasn't being judged and she wasn't being put into weird, vaguely abusive situations. Like she could just like hang out and relax. And that itself, like, she is never relaxed around Harper. Yeah. Like there is no point at which they are relaxed together.
Because she drags her up onto a roof.
Yeah, she first drags her onto a roof and then she drags her to this family and then they have this weird little tryst, but it's not like they're freaked, they're stressed because the door doesn't lock. Like there's no moment in which they can actually be comfortable together until the Instagram feed at the last minute.
Slight disagreement here. When they're asleep.
Oh yeah.
When they're asleep, they're very cute. Which is, you know, it's what parents say about their kids when they're not really feeling it, but they're cute when they're asleep.
Yeah.
So I feel like this movie very much like lives and dies by its side characters, right?
Yeah.
There are so many, like, both well horrible and great characters. She had, like, Dan Levy. I mean, I love Dan Levy. I really truly do.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the side characters are just really, like, they're fun. And then they are randomly horrible in ways that could have been done better. But
yeah.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dan Levy was my favorite part of the film. Even though sometimes he's weird, you know, he's a little bit too campy in how he interacts with people and stuff like that. Like, I still think he was just fun. And I appreciated his presence and, you know, he made more sense than most people in the film. I liked Aubrey Plaza's character a lot as well.
Yeah. I like Dan Levy a lot until he kind of switches his stance at the end, like really unmotivated.
Yeah.
Because he could have
given the same speech about everybody's coming out process is different. And then when she says, you know, I want someone who's ready now, he would have been like, yeah, I know. And she's not there. Yeah. So let's go back to the place where we live. And, you know, either you'll find your way back to each other in 2 years or you won't. But, like, because that speech is still very lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do. He has a lot of really great comments on marriage. you know, like, have you asked a older male's permission to take ownership of your adult female romantic partner? You know, like, there's, like, that's very fun. And, yeah, he's very fun in this. Aubrey Plaza is great in this. She's great in everything. I also really like Jane. I think Jane, at first I was like, ooh, this character, like, when you first meet her, it's a little off-putting because she is tonally in kind of a different movie. But, and then as you get to know her, I really liked her in this movie as well.
She is kind of the equivalent of, oh no, the humans were the monsters all along. That she is really the only reasonable person in this story. And they're like, because when she comes like, oh, I cleaned the air filters, and you're like, that's weird. And then you realize that, no, she's just like the sort of task horse that they just sent to do everything because she's a good person and good at things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I liked that she and the Dan Levy character became.
Yes, I really like that. Yeah. Like, oh, two of my favorite characters like, ended teamed up together in a way in this movie.
Because it could have been really easy for him to sit there and be sarcastic about like all these characters. And he's like, he is 150% in. Like, he understands everything. He remembers it. And I'm like, yay.
Yeah.
My little
I love
nerd
that he loves her nerdy book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I found the film very frustrating at times, but I liked that. I don't know. I was telling someone the other day, like, you know, I've been watching queer movies for a long time, and I'm just happy that everybody survives.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice when we can just say, like, you know, yeah, it's a contrived story. There are flaws with it, but like. Everyone
ends up happy at the end, whether or not we like how they got there.
Yeah. And again, like, you're like, yes, I'm frustrated with the ending, and there are parts I like, which is what I say about the majority of the regular romantic, regular is the wrong word, the mainstream romantic comedies that I watch. And again, I'm like, it kind of sucks that makes me happy, but that's what it is. Do you have a favorite part, Kitty?
I liked that speech that Dan Levy said that got immediately negated, but that was my favorite part because it was the part that like had the only sort of the real emotional resonance. And it's also, unfortunately, you know, it's also like, you know, you have to tap into a coming out story, like all that. I wish we didn't have to deal with any of that. I wish we could have a romantic comedy that just didn't touch any of those topics, but you know, I liked how they dealt with that. So,
and I mean, there are a couple of other queer Christmas movies coming out this year, so I'm hoping to watch those and just be fluffy.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite part, AJ?
I'd say I liked the every time Dan Levy talked about marriage was very fun. The speech was fun, and I mean, I don't necessarily have that favorite part. But I really liked when the characters I liked were on screen because they just, you know, like they helped to move this movie along in a way where I was like, I'd get really frustrated and then a character would come in and say like a pretty witty one liner or have like a fun little moment or, you know, something that would kind of like, kind of reset. You know, Jenna is about 2 weeks away from giving birth and all the birth classes are like, remember, between contractions, take a cleansing breath. And that's what I felt like these characters were. They were cleansing breaths.
Yeah, I feel like my favorite part was all of the like small throwaway interactions in this movie. And that's not necessarily like a neg on the movie. It's just like it had good these little scenes where cleansing breaths or a little like, this is what, you know, reality is also like, I think, you know, we've talked to the end as far as we're gonna get it because we're like, wrong end. On Rotten Tomatoes, this has an 84% fresh rating from critics and an 83% fresh rating from audiences. When I checked 2 days ago, it was the other way around. So basically, it's not moving from there. Mm-hmm. It has a 6.8 on IMDb. What grade would you give this out of 10? And you can decide what that scale means to you, movie by movie. Mm. I think I would give this like a 7.5. It's like a stable workhorse movie with problematic parts, but I liked it. I don't think I'll rewatch it. I don't think it's that kind of movie, but it's still like it made me happy, and even though I was angry at so many parts of it, I was still like, I liked the way I felt, you know, after I watched it. Not that I was happy that it was over, but I was, you know, it was an enjoyable movie with flaws, which is basically a movie.
Yeah.
I have student loans to back up these very clever and concise grades.
I think I would probably give it something like a 7, you know, I don't know. I'm maybe a little bit less generous toward it than I should be. I enjoyed watching it, but I also got so frustrated with it that made it a little bit harder for me. And I also find it hard to watch movies where I feel like the message about what a good relationship is wrong. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know. And so that kind of tweaks something in my brain. And this movie just did that over and over and over
Absolutely.
Again. So that was hard.
I think also it's one of those things where like it had so much potential. So that lowers the grade from what it's weird. Like it could have had a higher grade if it was a worse movie almost. Where you'd be like, well, for what it is. And here you're like, no, almost.
Yeah, because it can't quite figure out how much it's taking itself seriously. You know, because there are some scenes that are very serious and some scenes that are totally the opposite. And you just don't really know, like, how to feel about any of the people, I think.
I mean, I think you know pretty well, but you want to not feel that way about them.
Yeah.
What about you, AJ?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's enough pretty solid humor in it that rescues it for me. I recognize the significance of having, you know, a queer holiday film, which is so rare already. Although, Katie, I do totally agree. Like, I don't think the coming out story needs to be a part of it. Like, I think like the more interesting movie is the one that's just, hey, my lesbian daughter and her girlfriend are coming home to their conservative family who's running for mayor, and everybody knows it, but like, how do they handle that, and how do they come together? I don't know.
I would have liked to see the version of this movie where Mary Steenburgen has to have like a 5-minute monologue about how she would put them in different rooms even if they were straight. But it's not because I was thinking about that. Like, obviously, Alice and Brie and her husband share a room because I don't know, maybe they lived far. But like, they would share a room because they're married. And Jane's, you know, a hypothetical boyfriend would not get to, again, she lives somewhere else. But like, you know what I mean? Where she would fall into this super uncomfortable, like, I'm not homophobic. I just believe in the sanctity of marriage. Like, that would have been a really fun scene.
Or if it was just the same. Characters and everything, but the misunderstanding was about, you know, what job they do, or, you know, something just, you know, totally unrelated to sexual orientation.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been nice.
So, I think for me, it's like a 5. Like, there was so much of it that I just found really frustrating and kind of rage-inducing, but there was also a lot of fun characters and good comedy, so they kind of balance each other for me.
All right, so, I mean, I feel like sometimes it's a very rhetorical question of, does this movie need fixing? AJ, how would you choose to fix this movie?
Like I said, I would take out the coming out story. I don't know exactly how to replace it or how to adjust it, but I just think that introduces so much toxicity into this story that it makes me actively root against the main couple getting together. And I think the movie wants you to root for them, but I think get rid of that coming out story, and then you don't have Harper dragging her into the closet. It reminds me of Dan Savage. If you listen to Savage Lovecast, he talks about, you know, when you date somebody, when you are out of the closet and you date somebody who is in the closet, they are effectively dragging you into the closet again, and you have to come out again, and that can be traumatic. So I just found, like, I just kept thinking about that and kept thinking about his idea of, you know, selected family and the only leverage you have over your family is your presence and all that stuff. And I was like, these people need to listen to Savage Lovecast, # Savage Lovecast.
that's your fix. It's just like in the middle of the movie, they sit down for 15 minutes and.
Yeah, they call Dan Savage and ask his opinion, and then he fixes this movie somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Katie?
I think I would have them break up. I think that that, you know, heartfelt scene with Dan Levy talking about coming out stories and all this. I think she would have left, and then maybe, you know, there'd be a montage of a couple of years where, you know, Harper fixes her life and comes out to her family and becomes a better person. And then maybe they can reconnect at some point, but I would have her leave. I would have there be actual stakes to the way she's treated her.
Yeah.
And, I think that could be, you know, I don't think that she's irredeemable, but I think she has to actually try to change and not just say, oh, okay, it's cool now, you know. Like, I don't think that's enough at all.
Yeah, I mean, she has some therapy that she needs to go to because, like, all of her worth is so tied up in all these weird things, and that's really hard to untie. Yeah, I...
Yeah.
My first note is, well, more Dan Levy, please. But that's a given. So I have like sort of two fixes. One of them is basically along both of your lines, where I'm like, well, it could just be like Harper is more decent about it. Like she doesn't throw Abby under the bus, doesn't abandon her, is more like, is like understanding that it's really hard for Abby and also open with the fact that it's really hard for her. Like you could still have parts of the movie the same, but which, and like the whole story still sucks, but she is not so bad about the whole thing. I also like the idea kind of them breaking up, but Abby is just like, but we could still, you know, spend Christmas together. But I also think it would be funny to do a sort of Family Stone, or I guess While You Were Sleeping style switcheroo, where Abby does wind up with Riley, and that's still a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like, oh, she finally got away from Harper. It was just like, they were not right for each other right now, but everybody still likes each other. And so, you know.
Yeah.
Hashtag Team Riley.
Yeah. Or you know, or something maybe like... Kissing Jessica Stein, where, you know, maybe Harper, you know, she's clearly bi, she's dated a man before, or maybe, you know, maybe she's, I don't know, but she could just be like, oh, actually, you know, I'm bi, this guy is back in my life, he's actually pretty cool, I'm gonna go with that, and you know, like, that could be okay, you know, that's not a problem.
Yeah, where you just realize, like, we're, you know, we had a good run, but we're not right for each other right now, maybe never.
Yeah.
Let's do brunch.
Yeah.
All right, I think we did make it better in different ways. So, can we make it weird? Katie, do you want to go first?
No.
Well, I have a make it weird.
It's all right,
very make it quick. Weird. So, this movie is like about redemption, and you know, about like people kind of realizing how they've been horrible. So I was like, well, that's Christmas Carol. So my fix is you do this movie, but it's just like a queer Christmas Carol. And you kind of, you know, because I don't know, like, and because I want like all of them to, like, the whole family, this whole crappy family is experiencing like the queer ghosts of Christmas and like helping them be better people. I don't know. I just, particularly at the end when the dad says he sunk all of his money into this campaign, and I'm like, oh, okay, so this is also about financial ruin, right? And so that felt very Christmas Carol-y when he turns down the job in favor of, you know, being with his family.
I really appreciated that he didn't tell them that. He just said,
it's not going to work out.
Because he could have said it and then everyone would have been like, oh, like, you no, chose us.
Yeah. Or they would have felt obligated to go back in the closet or whatever to help him. Yeah.
So that was a nice little touch. All right. My make it weird, I just decided that I want to lean into the, like, everyone has a secret thing. And just like a domino where everyone comes out of the closet. Just turns out everyone is on the LGBTQ plus spectrum. Just except for Jane, because I love the line, I don't have a secret, but I'm an ally. I love that.
Yeah.
And like you would still have like, well, she's an outsider because she's you. I just for some, and maybe it even like just keeps escalating where like every person they meet on their like Boxing Day walk through the town is like, you know, you made me realize something about myself, and just like the whole town is just now all right, and it's just like this little nice little enclave.
Yeah.
And there are no jokes about there being something in the water or anything. It's just like, oh, hey, we all
so it's like practical magic.
Yes,
but instead of witches.
All right,
I think it could be weird as like a spy story where the reason that everybody's keeping all these secrets is because actually they have a bigger secret, which is that they're all spies. Maybe the whole family is Russian spies and they're doing this like the Americans,
oh my God,
you know, where they're pretending
or
to
they're
be,
all spies, but nobody knows that everyone else is a spy.
Oh, that's even better. Oh,
kind of like Mr. and Mrs. No, Smith, good. But it's the whole family.
Yeah. That would be great. And also Dan Levy's character as well.
Oh, yeah, because he's tracking everybody.
Because he's coming in to, like, spy on the spy family.
Yeah. Or it turns out that he's Charlie to all these angels and none of them knew.
Oh, man. I want to see all of these movies more than I want to rewatch this movie.
Yeah, Queer Spies is a... Actually, it's a good combo weird. Everyone comes out and also reveals that they're spies. And you're like... All right.
Yep, why not?
Did we learn anything from this movie? I feel like we learned, like, listen to people when they start treating you bad.
Mm. I mean, we learned that, but we're not supposed to learn.
No.
We're supposed to learn the opposite of that.
Also, we learned that it's cheaper to get an Uber back before Christmas halfway there. And is better for you in all the ways.
Yeah.
You learned that you like Kristen Stewart?
Yeah. I've never really appreciated her as an actor, and I really appreciated her in this. Like, she had to do a lot of heavy lifting in this movie, and I think she handled it. And she had to deal with, frankly, some really, like, difficult character transitions of, like, why is her character suddenly switching into this mode? And I thought she handled that very well. And I thought she... Like, I bought it, and I felt for her, and I was really rooting for her, which I did not think I would.
I like Kristen Stewart a lot. I have seen all of the Twilight movies many times, that's a sort of deep, dark secret about...
That's why I don't like Kristen Stewart.
We could discuss the acting in that film. It's a whole other thing. The movie that made me really, really like her was The Runaways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. I need to see that.
You do need to see that. It's very, very good. Also kind of queer, you know, she is excellent in that. I think that's the first film I saw of her where she had really good, you know, script writing and really was able to perform in a way that, like, you know, let her be an interesting character, played well. So I've seen a few other films of her, and I like her a lot. So I thought she was good in this.
I really like Kristen Stewart. I liked her in this. And it's also funny because she is one of those, like, very modern examples of, like, Kristen Stewart and Gal Pal in, like, all of the tabloids where you're like, yeah, sure. Even after she, like, came out as, like, close friends, snuggle with their, I was going somewhere with this. Oh, yeah, no. And I wish that she could have been given the better version of this movie because it's a movie that, you know, does still matter. In some ways.
Yeah.
Katie, where can people find you and the things that you do? In space.
I wish. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter most of the time. I'm there a lot as Astro Katie. I'm on Instagram as Astro Katie Mac because somebody else has the handle Astro Katie and I cannot get it from them. My website is astrokatie.com and there's stuff there and you can buy my book, which is The End of Everything, Astrophysically Speaking. It's about different ways the universe might end and it's more fun than it sounds.
And you can give it to grandparents in what, 15, 16 different countries now?
It is being translated to 15 different languages. The Polish edition I know is for sale at the moment. I'm not sure if all of the others are yet, but it's getting around out there in the world, which is really fun. It definitely is not as depressing a book as you might think it would be. It's much more humorous and lightweight. So if you're interested in the universe, then check it out.
Adding it to my Amazon cart now.
When is the film version coming out, and who will be starring as the romantic lead?
we will see. I don't I can't tell you yet.
Next week we'll be talking about The Night Before the Knigget Before Christmas. You can find our show notes where we will link to all of the Katie things and any other things that you might like at theincomparable.com/chickflickfix. You can support us on Patreon, or you can support us on The Incomparable. We're Chick Flick Fix on Twitter and Instagram. We'll be back next week. Say goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, AJ.
Goodbye, Katie. You don't have to do this gimmick if you don't want to.
Goodbye, everyone. and me too. I don't know.
Nailed it.